Hi, you're listening to Lady Radio from the Women's Collective on CITR 101.9, broadcasting, of course, from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm Ivana, and we're in the studio today with Elizabeth, Callie, Paula, Paulina, and Cassandra. Today we're going to talk about women in the arts. We're going to interview Alex Rodriguez and Danica Inad of UBC V-Day, and we're going to find out what V-Day is, what it's about, and a little more regarding their upcoming fundraiser. Today we also have the first installment of the Lady Radio Book Club, and it's going to be led by our own very lovely Callie Hitchcock. So to start off the show today, we're going to be listening to some War Paint. This is Love Is to Die on CITR 101.9.
Witches walk, but I tread lightly, she said. We'll be right back.
All right, welcome back to Lady Radio. That was Love Is to Die by Warpaint. Now we are here in studio with Alex Rodriguez and Danica Enad from UBC V-Days. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hello. I just realized that I said UBC V-Days, as in more than one day.
They do go on lots of days. It's every day.
Every
day.
Every day is UBC V-Day.
Every day.
that's great. So can you guys introduce yourselves to our listeners, your names, a bit what it is that you're doing in this year's production, and how long you've been involved with V-Day?
All right. I'm Danica. I am in third year now, so I've been doing V-Day since I was in first year, so this is my third year involved in the show. I am the director of A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, and A Prayer, which we call MERP, because it's a mouthful.
And I'm Alex. I'm in my second year. I performed last year, and this year I am directing the Vagina Monologues, and we like to call it Vag Moms.
Cool. Because not acronyms. Shorter words, never mind.
Yeah, shortened things. So can you tell us a bit about V-Day? What is it?
First and foremost, V-Day is a movement, and it's based in a piece of writing that was done in the 90s by Eve Ensler. And it's a series of monologues that are performed, and it's supposed to bring in the voices of many different kinds of women and their reaction to what it means to be a woman, violence, abuse, love, hate, things like that.
Yeah, here at UBC, we specifically put on both of these shows, and all the proceeds that we get from these shows go back into the community. So we pick organizations that will receive donations. One that always gets donations is SASC here on campus. We also pick past recipients, have been like the Women's Shelter, Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter, Nueva. So it's just whatever organization that we can that helps women who have faced violence.
Who are you donating to this year, other than SASC?
We actually
decided. That's not a vote. That is the cast gets to vote. That's one of the cool things. The cast gets to do their own research on which one they think they like, which organization they like the most, and then we just put it up to a vote. And they are still doing their research, so they have to vote soon.
Very cool. So I wanted to know a little bit more about each of your like V-Day stories. Like, what brought you to V-Day? What has your journey through V-Day been? Because for those of you listeners out there, I actually met both Danica and Alex last year when we all did V-Day together. So I know your V-Day story a teeny tiny baby bit. But from the beginning, the V-Day tale of each of you.
You want me to go because I'm older?
Yeah.
All this goes first. So actually, it started Imagine Day first year for me. I was just walking around the campus just completely lost, and this girl was like, "Do you like acting?" And I was like, "I've never been in a show. I don't act. Acting is not a thing that I do." And then she just got to talking about what the show does, and then she mentioned violence against women and like the Eve Ensler and the Vagina Monologues, and I vaguely heard about, like, I've heard the title of Vagina Monologues. I didn't know what it was, so I was just like, "Okay, cool." And I just looked at it a little bit more, and I was like, violence against women, this is such a good cause. So I was like, I will audition and see what happens, because I've never acted before. And so that was like first year Danica, and then I got in, and I got to work with a huge group of very talented individuals, and they like opened my eyes up to what the show is all about and what it means and what it can present to other people. And because there were so many of us and it was such a diverse group, I got to hear a lot about the way other people experience the world, and that was one of the most important things for me, was just learning from everyone else, because everyone else had such different opinions and different viewpoints that it just made me fall in love with learning more. And I always know that there's more to learn, and I'm not completely there yet. So I came back for my second year, and it was just as amazing. And I got to work with Elizabeth and Alex, and it was such a good time, and we had such great conversations. And that's the thing that keeps me coming back, is the conversations that we get to have together. And the show is a bonus, but it's mostly just learning from everyone else that I love.
My first experience with the Vagina Monologues was when I was in high school. I had just come out to my mother, and the only way she knew how to react was to buy it for me on a paperback. And I read it, and it was wild, and I had never seen anything like it before. And then when I came to college, I heard about it, and I was like, "Oh my God, I could be in this. I could do this." And then I was horrified because I have terrible anxiety, and I was like, "Nope, can't do it. Performing, not a chance." So then it. It was one of those things where, like, very last minute, I signed up, and I was like, "Okay, you can do this, Alex, you can do this." And I walked in, And I was like, hi, I'm Alex. And they were like, okay, cool. Will you just, like, sign in? And I was like, okay, cool. So then I read one of the monologues. And, like, one of the first things that I did was just burst into tears after I read the first monologue. And it was tragic and horrifying. But they gave me a chance. And I got to perform in it. And it was a huge experience for so many reasons. Just being able to get on stage was a huge deal for me. But then being able to interact with so many voices and so many stories and sort of develop my feminism and, like, bring more to the conversation, but also be able to listen to the conversation. So I'm excited to come back as a director.
Very cool. Just a little bit more about, like, the way that V-Day brings in, like, all these different voices and stories. I know a big part of when I did V-Day and what we do every year is doing workshops. So what kind of workshops have you guys brought in this year?
Well, our amazing coordinators, Lauren and Daphne. Lauren is also my cousin, so I roped her into doing that. They found some really great workshops about, like, how to deal with standing up for yourself. I feel like that was the main theme that they had in all the workshops that we did. It was just, like, how to use your own voice to your own benefit and, mm-hmm. how you find your voice within yourself. And it was very much, we had a few from the Women's Center, mm-hmm. Women's Center, mm-hmm. teaching us about sexual assault statistics, and mm-hmm. SAS came in mm-hmm. to talk to us about sexual assault support. We had
UBC med students
come in and give us a sex ed class, which is so much fun. It was so great. It was a few weeks ago, and it was the best thing ever. It was so great. It was very much like learning about ourselves and how to find our voice and how to use that voice to spread a message or stand up for yourself, stuff like that.
Yeah, just about, like, reclamation of narrative and knowing as much as you can about yourself and other women to be able to empower yourself and others, I think.
Yeah.
Wow, that is very cool. I like that. I like how you themed that. Nice. So can you tell us a bit about your individual visions for the productions here? Like, speaking of getting your voice out there, things like approaches or themes that you've chosen to do when you're directing?
So Vagmons is sort of, I don't want to say dated, but it definitely comes from a perspective of second wave feminism. So a big part of my theme this year is what it means to be in a vagina self-help workshop in 2016. So it's sort of like taking the classic understanding of blank anonymous and bringing people into a circle and a community. So it's supposed to be a huge dialogue between the characters in the show, but also the audience. So basically, my show is supposed to sort of flip it on its head a little bit. So we're still using all of the same monologues from previous, but we're trying to bring it into a new, more intersectional vision.
For MERP, because I find that it is very much heavier than the vagina monologues, which you can have a lot of fun with. MERP is very much more serious and very heavy as a piece, and it asks a lot of my cast and a lot of them, like, personally and emotionally. So what I tried to do was work on individual transformation, how everyone is affected by this, whether it's your story or someone else's story. They're using their voice to send out a message, so it's very much about personal transformation and how these things that happen to women affect us and how it changes us and it changes our perspective. And I just try to really empower them in finding their voice. I know a lot of rehearsals, I think it was Michaela who came out, like, out of rehearsal one day, was just kind of like, why is every rehearsal like therapy? And I just make them sit there and think about their lives and, like, write things down, and, like, wrote letters to themselves and stuff like that. And I just try to, like, help them find that place within themselves that allows them to safely express the emotions in MERP without being harmful for themselves, because it is a heavy show, because it does ask a lot of heavy emotions from the people presenting it. I just want to make sure that they're always in that safe space for themselves.
Very cool. Thank you. In terms of that, I know V-Day, like, as you guys have described, it is a pretty unique production in that it doesn't necessarily, like, just focus on the theater. Like, there is a lot of that, like, heaviness for the people who are working on it, and, like, a lot of, like, the workshopping and serious discussions. Why do you think V-Day is important? Like, we're talking about it being, you know, vagina monologues maybe being a bit dated, but, like, why do you think it is that the movement, like, to you is important, and why does it matter to you that you keep doing these things?
I think in the setting that is university, I think it's a point of access for people. I think when a lot of people come to university, they don't always have these things in their homes or their small towns and things like that. And when you come to something like this, and you see V-Day or you see vagina monologues, it can be shocking and jarring, but I think it's a really great way to open up a conversation, maybe revamp a conversation or start a completely new one. I think it's important because it brings voices, and that's what's important, I think, getting the conversation started.
Yeah, like for me, the big thing about V-Day is just it's like an access point. You start off there. It's not necessarily like the entire story, but it does intrigue you, and it does make you want to learn more, and like it's supposed to make you uncomfortable. Like, you sit there as an audience member and you're just like, what is going on? You sit there as a cast member and you're like, you're asking me to do what now? Like, first year I had to like pretend to have an orgasm on stage. I was like, I've never been in play, let alone pretended to have an orgasm on stage. But and so it like makes you uncomfortable, but the point of this is to ask, why are you uncomfortable and why is this affecting you in that way? So it does very much start a conversation. And that's the great thing about our cast, is they always want to keep talking about everything that goes on. It's like they always, it's such great because they have such great ideas and they have such great viewpoints, and they're always bringing new things to their pieces that us as directors, I feel, I don't want to talk for Alex, but us for as directors have never heard or seen before. And so this is their chance to express their thoughts and their opinions about the pieces themselves, right?
Yeah, I think one of the important things is that this is a production that happens every year in so many different places around the world, but you're always going to bring your own voice to it, and you can always bring a new perspective, and that's what's important about this conversation, is that no one's ever heard you speak, and if they have, then it's important to keep always thinking and revising, because you can always move forward in your feminism, and I think that's important too. And that's an important message, especially for Badge Moms, is that we can always be revising. We can always become more intersectional.
Very cool. Can you tell me a bit more about the talkbacks?
That's a big, important part. Yeah. That is a huge, huge, important part. And that's something that I had never experienced before in any production until last year when I performed. So talkbacks are basically this period of time after the show wherein we engage with the audience and they're allowed to ask us questions and we're allowed to explain things to them.
Yeah. I think it's just like a forum as well, just to like bring the audience into the conversations we've had as cast, because we do everything together as a cast. We do these workshops together. We have these discussions together, but the audience never gets to see those or hear those. So this is their chance to know where we're coming from and see the problems that we saw maybe with the pieces or the things that we were thinking about trying to portray, and like the issues that may or may not have arisen. Some of these monologues are challenging, and it's a time for them to express the challenges that they saw and the challenges that like going through the process. And so it's a chance for that engagement between the audience and the cast members and directors just to continue that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's important that you said the word engagement, because in like traditional ideas of production, you don't necessarily get to transcend the relationship between watch and the watcher and the watched, and that's why these conversations happen, and that's how we always kind of come back to the fact that this is a movement and not just a production.
Cool. Well, speaking of community engagement, I hear you have an event coming up, an open microphone style event. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, we are doing the UBC V-Day, a celebration of student voice and art, and that's happening next Wednesday in the new sub in the art gallery, and it's going from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And basically, we're just showcasing as many people as we can in many artistic forms. So if you can sing, if you can dance, if you produce art, then
if you can hula hoop,
if you can do body posi, body posi yoga, I was gonna say, but that's basically we're just trying to showcase everybody that we can while raising money again for the cause. And also, if you want to perform, like just email ubcvday@gmail.com. Because we're still looking for people, too.
Good. And I think there's also a Google form on the event page that you can sign up on. I did look around a little. I thought about it. Who knows?
You should do it.
Everyone out there,
please,
you might come and see me perform along with these people. I'll hula hoop for you. I'll learn how to hula hoop in the next couple days.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't. Last year, we had a really great hula hooping performance. I remember that. That was
it was great.
It was good.
I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for that. So, V-Day, Vagina Monologues, MERP, how can people see them if they want to go to the show?
All right. So shows are from February 9th to 13th. They are alternating days. So February 9th, 11th, and 13th are going to be Vagina Monologues. And then February 10th, 12th, and 13th will be A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, and A Prayer. Tickets are $10 for students, $15 for general. It will be held in The Nest in the Performance Theater, which is that egg thing in the center of the building. Mm-hmm. The matinee starts at 2 p.m. on the Saturday the 13th, and which will be Vagina Monologues, and MERP will close the run at 7.
And where can people get tickets?
If you go to our Facebook page, UBC V-Day, there will be links. You can buy them at the door. You can also buy them online at Brown Paper Tickets.
And we're also going to begin boothing soon, so you can come see us in the nest, and we'll be selling tickets.
Are you bringing out the vulva suit?
Yes. The vulva costume's going to make an appearance. Everyone gets a vagina hug.
If you're curious about what the vulva suit is, listeners, you'll see.
It's going to be great.
Come hang out in the sub in the next week, and you'll find out.
Yeah.
And we'll also be selling vulva chocolates.
Vulva chocolates.
Those are really good. Also, oh, man, so exciting. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Good luck with the production. It's going to be great. We'll definitely be at the open mic and at the shows. Fantastic. We're just going to take a short break, and we will be back with the first installment of Lady Radio's Book Club here on CITR 101.9.
All the words I had to say, they don't mean nothing to you. What the heaven on the way? There's nothing better. All we had to do is touch. It was the best chance I could have ever given all of us. All day long we looked at fall, looked into the sun.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hey UBC, got consent? January is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and practicing consent is one way you can make a difference. Here's what you need to know. Consent is the voluntary, enthusiastic agreement to engage in sexual activity of any kind. Consent is not present if someone feels pressured, coerced, or threatened. If you are pressuring someone to have sexual contact, stop. it's sexual assault. If someone is under the influence of alcohol or drugs, they can't legally consent to any sexual activity. If you are unsure whether someone is under the influence, don't engage in sexual contact. Wait for another time when you're both sober and both interested. Respect and consent must be ongoing. Just because someone consented before doesn't mean they still consent. Continue to check in and listen. For more information, visit gotconsent.ca or students.ubc.ca/consent.
Welcome back. That was Renee by Sales, followed by Hello Kitty by Nancy Letitia. So now we have the first installment of the Lady Radio Book Club, led by our beautiful Callie Hitchcock. So Callie, to start us off, do you want to tell us a little bit more about the short stories that you picked for us to read this week and why you chose them?
Yeah. So about a year ago, I was looking for some good sort of contemporary female writers. I was recommended to me by my friend from Berkeley. I was in San Francisco at the time. I actually went to City Lights. It was very like a romantic moment, book moment, where you're like, I'm just gonna go to City Lights bookstore and pick up this book. So I started reading it, and she's totally amazing. Her name is Lydia Davis. The collection that we have is called the Collected Stories of Lydia Davis.
And it's this beautiful fat neon orange book. It's just a radiant vision here
it's
on our desk.
It's really, really beautiful. And it has those weird side pages that actually kind of bother me, but
it's kind of like an accordion almost.
Yes.
In some ways.
Yeah. So she's an American writer from the East Coast. She also does French translation. She's won a ton of awards, like the Penn Award. And So I chose her stories because they're completely unique. And she has this way of, I think in coming into the 21st century, what a lot of my favorite writers are doing is they're trying to like bend sort of linear logic or sort of a 1-2-3 end story kind of pattern. And so she does that by really like intricately drawing like these finer nuanced human experiences without ever losing scale or range. So that's what I've been really interested in with her.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the stories are 10 pages, or they're one sentence, or they're two paragraphs. And she makes a point to call them stories instead of short stories, because short stories have this connotation of, formulaic connotations.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to do that, and she's totally messing with like meaning fulfillment. So Okay, we all read four stories from her collection. What did you guys think? Did you guys have a favorite out of the ones we chose? And
well, I think it's kind of hard to say because, you know, it's exactly what you were just talking about, that they all are so varied, just mm-hmm. kind of the length and the style. I mean, if you didn't know or you weren't familiar with her work, you wouldn't necessarily even know that they were all by her. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But in terms of a favorite.
Oh, yeah. I have to admit this collection, like, rocked my world real hard. I was trying to hunt this down forever, and then I finally ended up, like, serendipitously decided to pop into Pulp Fiction when I was, like, between buses and got it. And the guy who gave it to me was like, oh, yeah. He was afraid to say that he liked her or not because he was like, I don't want to impact your opinion or, like, people feel different ways about her. I feel like you either love her or you just, like, don't care. So I was kind of like, oh, what am I getting myself into? And then I opened it up and was just like, this has changed my life. So accordingly, the third or fourth story, which I know we talked about, is called Break It Down. And, like,
she broke it down.
She broke it down so much. I mean, like, personal engagement or, like, personal, to share a personal fact, just, like, the experience that she happened to be talking about then is something that I was, like, was/am kind of, like, very much in the middle of personally. And I was just, like, the way that she is explaining this situation, which I feel like someone else can probably explain more eloquently than me. I don't even know, like, this.
Well,
how would you describe
that story?
Can I
pull a quote from it?
Please.
Does anybody want to? Okay. So my favorite quote from that story specifically is, so she's, it's sort of this, I think the character is a male, or I'm not sure what kind of character it is, but they are explaining a relationship and the beginning to end and, like, how it feels to be in that relationship. And then once it's over, like, what does that mean? And what do you, what, like, philosophically, what are we thinking about it? And the joke is that the person is trying to measure it. And then at the end they say, you can't measure it because the pain comes after and it lasts longer. So the question really is, why doesn't the pain make you say, I won't do it again, when the pain is so bad that you have to say that, but you don't? So it's just kind of this beautiful, it's beautiful, it's incredible. Because it's kind of these little, what she really gets at is these little unknown things that we never really allow ourselves to think, or we're just sort of like, well, it takes half as long as the time you were dating to get over a person. And we're all just like, for sure. And, like, let's just go along our merry way. But then maybe an emotional reality is that maybe it lasts longer than even being with them. And, like, shouldn't that make us not do it? And we will do it again and again. And and what does that mean about humans? Are we, like, masochists, or I don't know. Like, it's, I love that. I love that kind of stuff. Yeah, that was my favorite part. Anyway. Cool.
The first short story in the collection, it's on the third page. It's just titled Story, but I think it does a really good job of sort of explaining what it's like to be in a relationship and be sort of insecure with yourself, and that sort of shows in the relationships that you're in. So I feel like I could definitely, like, identify with what she's trying to say, just because I feel like everyone's gone through some sort of relationship where they're not necessarily, like, secure within themselves, and that, like, totally shows, through the actions and just, like, your thoughts. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like how she sort of paints this picture of how in a relationship, reality is extremely fragile, and you have, for some, I mean, maybe this is just me, but I feel like I completely don't know what's going on, like, 100% of the time. And I'm just like, is this what's happening? Is this what's happening? And then if they are telling me this, does that still mean it's happening? Or are they lying? But why would they lie? And, like, I just completely, I really relate to that kind of, like, what's happening?
And, like, I think that's one of the amazing things she does, though, right? Is, like, if you kind of just were to skim the page and look at the words she's using, they're not exactly these flashy sort of, like, really necessarily mm-hmm. intricate descriptions, but it's kind of this compounded effect of, after a while, she just builds and builds and builds on sort of this narrative that's happening through her head of, you know, the paranoia or just this the total destruction that comes with heartbreak, or just this constant questioning when you're within, you know, an intimate relationship. And I think that's what she does so magically that few other authors are able to do. It's just this kind of effect that builds on itself and builds on itself, and you get to a point in the piece where you're just almost in tears, or just you relate so so much that you're like, oh, damn, this is really like my life. This is my relationship.
One of the things that I really liked about that, like what you guys are both speaking to, the way that she lays that out is the way that you don't get like the other side of this. Like it is strictly just like what she is thinking. And there's one part, I was just rereading it on my way here, where she says in story, he comes up to me and puts his arms around me without speaking. And I think he's not speaking, not because he's feeling so much, but because he is preparing what he will say. And like, just that sentence reminded me of like how many times I've done that where I'm like, oh my God, what are you thinking right now? Like, this is what it is. And like totally misreading that. It's like, no, you're not preparing. You're not thinking, you're not feeling too much because like you couldn't possibly feel too much about me actually just preparing to like let me down or like whatever it is. But you never get the other side of like, was he actually just feeling so much because, you know, or like something that she doesn't even account for. And like, you never get that because like you can't.
Yeah. I know. I totally love that. And actually David Foster Wallace does this a lot as well. It's really honing in on and exploring like the intense solipsism that we all will live in and die in. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like all like, I don't know. It's almost like you can't escape that really like integral solipsism in all of us. And you're like, just run away with it. You just run away. I mean, I personally do. It sounds like other people do too. So I'm feeling good about that. But like, you just really run away with it. And I don't, it's almost like there's no solution necessarily. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, just to quote this story that we've all been raving about. So the character says, so the character is in a relationship and she's misreading, or there's a bit of a situation where her boyfriend is at his house or isn't at his house, and he might be seeing someone else, but she doesn't know, and he might be lying, and she's just trying to figure it all out, and she's doubting herself, and she's doubting him, and she says, maybe the truth does not matter, but I want to know it, if only so that I can come to some conclusions about such questions as whether he is angry at me or not. If he is, then how angry? Whether he still loves me or not. If he does, then how much? Whether he loves me or not. Or whether he loves her or not. How much? How capable? And how capable he is of deceiving me in the act and after the act in the telling. So it's just like these intense shades and gradations of like, what is going on? So I guess, was there any points in the book that you guys were reading where you felt also the stories were resonating for you in terms of relationships or in terms of the nature of language or how we use language and to apprehend reality or create reality? What do you guys think?
Well, there was a part in the last story we read called Go Away, where she's kind of talking about the nature of language. Yeah, and she's talking about anger and the fact that when her ex-partner, ex-lover is saying go away, that these words that he's telling her, he doesn't necessarily mean them. She kind of, you know, declares, no, you know, I don't really think that he necessarily means them. But she kind of goes into this analysis of the anger behind these words and what anger means. And I'll just read a little piece of that. She says, so it is not the anger in these words that hurts you, but the fact that he chooses to say words to you that mean you should never come back, even though he does not mean what the words say, even though only the words themselves mean what they say. But again, this is after this like compounded sort of snowballed effect of just this, you know, intricate weaving in and out of sort of, looking at the complexity of these dynamics when you're in the heat of a very intense moment within an intimate relationship. And just the way she does it, it just, it leaves you at the end like, wow, that's pretty much my inner narrative. And that's the crazy thing about it, is that she speaks so eloquently to kind of sort of the experiences that we all share, but no one necessarily really talks about.
Yeah. The language stuff is very, very interesting, especially when she's talking about, because instead of saying, so basically this, someone's partner is saying, go away, never come back. And so trying to process that sentiment. So the person doesn't say, I'm very angry at you, because that says the exact same thing as go away, but it actually doesn't. Like, semantically it says the same thing, but like, to say I'm very angry at you means you're going to like share that problem together and fix it. But to say go away and never come back means I want to hurt you. I want you to hurt your feelings. I want you to like you know? And so, I don't know.
So really I think cool. The moral of the story is no one ever say go away. Don't come back to anyone ever. Just don't do it. Don't even think about doing it. If you do it, take it back immediately. Just save us some hurt here.
Unless, like, you really, really mean it. Like, unless that is exactly what you want to say.
And even then, mull it over a while, you know, because you might not really mean it. Like, you might in that moment, but you're probably just angry. You don't really want to say that to someone you love.
Don't be rude.
Don't be rude.
Just don't be rude.
So do we think that language gets in its own way sometimes? Or do we have to sort of reverse manufacture language to get what we want? Like, what do we think? I don't know.
See, this is why I didn't major in English. Girl. You know, I think so. And we were discussing this in a philosophy class I'm taking now in existentialism. And we're talking about Sartre. And just the fact that the complexity of language, like, you can never really... Sometimes there are just some things that you can't analyze simply because the structure of language gets in the way. And I think this is especially important when we're talking about sort of trying to express ourselves, and when we're in kind of like trying to analyze the emotionality of what's going on in our heads and what's going on in our relationships. And I think that after a while you can really get to the point where words fail you, and I think that's kind of the point of all these miscommunications that we're always having in life, is that we can never really, well, sometimes we just can't speak to the heart of the issue just simply because language does fail us. And that's such a frustration for so many people, and I think the source of so much conflict, because, you know, sometimes you really just can't express yourself because there aren't words. And
any final comments, ladies, or anything you want to talk about?
I mean, okay, this is getting slightly off of the specific story thing.
No, let's just do it.
But just, I mean, I think what that whole idea of language getting, not even language getting its own way, but the problems with language and the limitations of language automatically puts me into thinking about just so many ways that language limits us, and, like, in terms of the power that language has to construct us as subjects, and, like, particularly if we're getting into talking about feminism and intersectional feminism and the way that words are thrown around and identity labels are thrown around and the issues of those and the way that we label ourselves or choose not to label ourselves are always changing, because language does have this power, like an immense power to construct your entire reality. And, you know, talk about this forever, but, like, that's why pronouns, for example, are so important, and which is something that I feel like you don't, unless you have to think about it, you often don't. And there are a lot of people who can go through the world because language works in their favor. The dominant language is the things, the kind of way that people talk works in their favor and, like, works in line with their privilege and helps to bastion their privilege as they go through their lives, that they never have to think about those things. But language is a very serious tool of power that, like, shapes everything.
Yeah, and so constitutes it, reality.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so stories like this, like, even just the way that she talks about the terms go away and the immense power that can have, like, it's, I think it speaks to so much more than just this one interaction.
Yeah, definitely. There's something about how, like, language can, in a way, like, stamps down the unstampable. But then at the same time, it's also a conduit for reality to us, or, like, our emotional reality, our, like, physical reality. Like, it, we do need some sort of conduit at all to, like, express ourselves. So what are we going to do? Okay, great. Well, that was a great conversation.
The first of many.
Yes.
We'll be brainstorming about what we're going to book club next time. But for now, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to fill you in on some Lady Radio approved events happening this week. So this next song coming up is Akua Naru. And it's her song Heard.
Yo, you know, like, I know what it means to be heard and seen undisturbed. Rock live, hear the crowd sing the words. Paint your passion in the verse till it hurts to peep the avid searchers. Rap blocks, debate the craft of your work. Watch the birth of an album sold. Want to platinum the fact that cats on that Spike Lee, we gotta have it. Anita sung of such rapture. Swedish young laughter. Swinging their arms as my song charms their ghetto blaster. Come on, brag about your talent. To the pastor, to the mailman, whoever half flattered. Half embarrassed, tell her that your song's on the radio. Story long, play me close. Got your girl on daily.
chap who gotta own, though the shit sound fab. We sing along to the song, yo. Love it, pop, supersedes the love it, don't got for us, drop. Been like it's hot and top the world watch. Guess our story's too deep for those who rather listen as we sliding down poles. For the camera exposed, grandma mouth closed. Moan for the answer, show who the boss, Tony Danza. Get your hands up, cause your narrative deserves a platform and a turn to know what it feels like to be heard.
To CITR's Shindig each week to hear the bands duke it out to be the winner of their night. Now come out to hear the winners compete to make it to the finals. Each semi will feature three of your past winners, with the winners of the semifinals guaranteed a place and a prize in the finals on February 5th. The third semi is happening on Tuesday, January 26th, featuring the winners from nights 2, 7, and 8. Atlanteans, Late Spring, and Red Circle. So come out to Pat's Pub and Brewhouse at 403 East Hastings at 8 for locally made beer, pool, music, and an epic night. Cover is $6 at the door and the show is 19+. Check out CITR on Facebook or on Twitter at CITR Shindig for all the details.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
And you're back with Lady Radio on CITR 101.9. That was Akua Naru with Herd. And Lady Radioer Paula Stiegler has been wanting to play that for a long time. So we're really happy that we finally got a chance to get that on the show. Paulina Chua is going to tell us about some events happening around town in the next week. So take it away, Paulina.
Hey, guys. It's event time. So Discorder's cover star and Janeiro artist Yusu is having a tape release tonight at Spare Room. In addition, there's Magical Clouds playing at Imperial tonight at 7 p.m. and Ty Siegel playing at Vogue Theater at 7 p.m. So there's a ton going on tonight. Also, UBC's Suicide Awareness Day is next Thursday, January 28th. Everyone's going to be wearing orange to help spread awareness and show support for those whose lives have been affected by the suicide of friends, family members, students, or colleagues, and to show that you want to reach out to those who are considering it. So there will be various information booths around campus for you to learn more about it, and you can check out some more for information, including a quiz about suicide myths on the UBC website. Monday at the Nest Performance Theater, the Terry Project is putting on a talk about toxic masculinity in the media and the representation of men in the media. So that'll be really interesting. Yak Tak is presenting paintings and sculptures by Jessica Jang, who is a student at Emily Carr, to explore the themes of the figure and girl-identified culture, and that's tonight at 7 p.m. Lastly, CITR and the UBC Film Society are hosting the Spinal Tap Beverage Garden. So the doors open at 7 and the movie starts at 8 and there's going to be beer, so you guys should go. And during the intermission, our local bands Yolks and Cheap Flavor will be playing. So yeah, check out those events. It's going to be a fun night.
Yeah, everyone's really excited. Well, sadly, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, everyone who joined us. Thank you to Danica and Alex from V-Day. And here in the studio, Elizabeth, Callie, Paulina, Paula, Cassandra, and of course, all of you listening out there. Next week, we're really excited for our show. We're going to be talking about women in poetry, including an interview with UBC poetry professor and honestly, overall beautiful woman, Sherida Warner. And we're also going to have local youth slam champion, Mariah Deer. So it's going to be a good show. Make sure you check it out. And stay tuned now, because coming up in a few minutes is an episode of UBC Insiders. We're going to finish off right now with Beta Frontiers by So Cold featuring Carmen L on Lady Radio CITR 101.9.